Welcome to Martin Luther King Day. Welcome to Monday. Thanks for starting your week and your morning with me. I'm Ross. Last Thursday, Governor Hickenlooper gave his annual State of the State speech. I have a huge amount of sound from that, but I want to start off with this two-second bit.
The state of our state is strong.
Okay, that's what the governor thinks. The state of our state is strong. There are a lot of policy aspects that went on in that speech as well as some pure politics. Joining us to talk about it, State Senator Laura Wood, Senate District 19, which if I remember correctly, much of Arvada and parts of Westminster that are in Jefferson County. Did I have that roughly right, Senator?
You have it exactly right, Ross. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for being here. I appreciate it. Are you going to the parade today?
I am going to get down there as soon as we're done on this call.
Excellent. Excellent. Very good. So first of all, let's start with the state of the state. What do you think, putting aside Governor Hickenlooper's speech for a minute, how are you feeling about Colorado right now?
Well, I listened to a lot of what has been said over the last, really the last year from the other side of the aisle, whether it was a state of the state or just their talk about bills, and they talk about the low unemployment and the strong economy, and what we see and hear out on the streets is there are pockets of Colorado that may have a strong economy or little pieces, little industries that have a strong economy, but not everybody. And I don't believe that rural Colorado would agree that we have a strong economic position right now. And the unemployment numbers, they just quit counting those who've quit looking for work and fallen off of the rolls on that end. And so is unemployment really as low as they say? I disagree fundamentally with that statement and others in his State of the State address.
And as far as the differences in, and let's stick with employment and economic opportunity kind of thing, in different parts of the state, how much of that is government's fault, in your opinion, and how much of it is the fact that, you know, commodity prices have come down and other things that aren't necessarily within the power of government to fix?
Well, that's a really great question, and I haven't tried to figure out the percentages, but you're right. A lot of it is the commodities. The oil and gas prices have dropped, and they're stacking up rigs and laying people off in a lot of those areas of the state. We have a stronger economy when oil and gas is doing well. But we've got the EPA trying to shut down mining in Colorado, impacting us on the energy sector. So that's part of the government. How much of it's the state government and how much of it's the federal government is to another, you know, division we should make and percentages we should talk about, because it all contributes to the economic position we're in.
One of the things that Governor Hickenlooper brought up repeatedly, and I think I'll inject a little sound into the conversation here from Hickenlooper's speech that we can react to. He spent some time towards the end of his speech talking about government and talking about democracy, and for a little flavor of it, we'll listen to this.
People believe in government when it works. Now, democracy is messy and imperfect. Sometimes it's uncomfortable and ugly. Haters gonna hate. But when democracy works, it's beautiful. It's poetry in motion. Democracy wasn't designed to be argument-free. It's built on vigorous debate and give me liberty or give me death dedication to the principles of freedom and equality.
And so what'd you make of that, Laura? I mean, and I've got some other sound that's maybe a little different, but he throws in some nice conservative give me liberty or give me death talking points. But I don't know, hard for me to think, okay, how do I put this? When I hear people saying that we like government when it works, to me that is code for you should just like government and you should like more government. I actually prefer less government, whether it's working or not.
That's right. Limited government is best. The government closest to the people, the limited, more limited, the better. So my reaction to his comment, because it was followed up with all of this talk about bipartisanship and compromise.
I'll tell you what, hold there for a second.
Okay.
Let's strive. I mean, really try to be more bipartisan this session. Let's forego cheap shots in favor of civility and productive dialogue.
And I'm going to pause there, but the clapping was for a long time, and the clapping was bipartisan, which may be the only bipartisan thing that happens this year. But, okay, now you've heard that sound. Continue with your point.
Well, that's the quote I was going to mention. Let's forego cheap shots in favor of civility. And that was directed directly at my side of the aisle, my colleagues on the Republican side. And what the governor was saying was, when I describe government, when I tell you what government should be, you should like it. And you go along with us and you play nice with us. And at the same time, during this speech, he targeted a bill that Senator Marble is running to eliminate ninth grade testing on all ninth grade students. In the state of the state, the governor said, we're standing firm on ninth grade assessments. So there's compromise, there's cooperation for you, there's civility, right? He is vetoing her bill from the state of the state address before her bill's even had its first hearing in the Senate.
Last session, you came together and passed bipartisan legislation to reduce testing by 30 hours so we can accurately measure our kids' progress towards meeting standards without overwhelming them or their teachers. But there are pivotal moments in our kids' academic careers when we need to know exactly where they stand on the learning curve so we can adjust course if needed before it's too late. That's why we're standing firm on ninth grade assessments.
It's funny, actually, at the end, like, people couldn't decide whether to applaud or not. So that's what you're talking about.
That's exactly it.
Now, is that particular issue something that has a definite partisan divide? Is it, you know, are there a lot of Republicans who want to completely eliminate ninth grade testing and, like, all Democrats want to keep it? Or what's the story with that issue?
That issue out in the community, in the constituent base, is very bipartisan. It's only partisan at the Capitol. You've got the Defers, who are the Democrats for Education Reform, and the governor, and that side of the aisle that wants to keep all the testing they can possibly keep. And so that's where we're divided on a partisan issue. There's a couple. I think she's got Mike Merrifield as a sponsor. He's a Democrat from Colorado Springs. So you've got some Democrats who will side with us on the testing issue and eliminating and reducing testing. But out in the communities, It's not partisan at all. It covers all parents, all kids that have someone in ninth grade right now, someone who is in ninth grade right now, or has been recently. They understand the testing they're under.
So, and just to be clear, without getting too far into the policy weeds on just one thing, but so would Vicky Marble's bill eliminate all standardized testing for ninth graders?
Yes, it's just getting rid of the standardized testing. We just don't feel that that's a year that you need the standardized testing. We've got the 10th grade practice test for the 11th grade test. We're not testing seniors. We don't need to test these kids on standardized testing every year through 3rd grade through 9th grade is what last year's bill ended up doing. And so we want to take the 9th grade off of that.
Interesting. You know, and when I think about Democrats saying, let's be more bipartisan and let's all get along and let's do stuff together. You know, I think back at the state level to what the Democrats did with the gun bills. I mean, that couldn't have been more party line, and they didn't listen to anybody. And then you think about Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama up at that level talking about particularly Obamacare, but some other things as well, especially with Obamacare. They said things like, we won, we're going to write the bill. They only want so-called bipartisanship when that means conservatives and Republicans moving to liberal and Democratic positions.
I agree wholeheartedly with you, Ross. That does feel like what we were listening to in the State of the State last week.
So there was a story in the Denver Post several days back that seemed to get some attention among kind of political insiders around the state. And it actually, Senator Marble features sort of prominently in it as the poster child for this so-called divide among Republicans. And the article was written in a way that makes it sound like Republicans just can't get along and all this stuff. And, you know, I guess by comparison, we're supposed to be proud of Democrats that they kind of march to whatever their so-called leadership tells them to do all the time and just do whatever they're told. I suppose that they're trying to make Republicans look bad for actually thinking about maybe their own principles or what their constituents want. What do you make, and our special guest, by the way, Senator Laura Woods from Senate District 19, what do you make, Laura, of this idea of this divide in the Republican Party, which is probably, you know, a big dream of the liberal media?
It is the dream of the liberal media. And I was asked late last week about who is the most conservative in our caucuses. And, you know, I hadn't even had caffeine yet that morning, and I tried to name names, but I failed miserably at naming who is conservative. But the one thing I can tell you is everyone on the Republican side of the legislature is more conservative than our colleagues on the Democrat side. Like Reagan said, it's not that they're wrong. He called them his liberal friends, remember? And he says, it's just that they know so much about that which isn't so. The Republicans are all conservative, and our leadership doesn't require us to march in lockstep with our party or with an agenda. We have the freedom to vote our consciences and our districts, and that's what the people want. That's what the constituents are hungry for, is people who will go up there and represent them, do what they say they would do, buck party leadership if it's necessary, buck your caucus if it's necessary, buck the opposing side whenever it's necessary. So, you know, we have the freedom to do that, and that's what makes us Republicans. We're free-thinking people. We're not marching in lockstep with our party.
Yeah, and also, again, you would think that Republicans are Republicans for a reason and that there is some underlying set of beliefs that may not be universal among the party, but at least a large subset of it, you know, economic liberty, for example, right? There can be a pretty big difference among Republicans on, let's pick one, gay marriage, on social issues, right? But on economic liberty, that's kind of a fundamental thing for Republicans, or at least it should be. And so it shouldn't be surprising when Republicans vote together most of the time. I think you were mentioned in that article, and I don't have it in front of me, but I think it said something like 14 or 15% of the time you didn't vote with leadership. So what I'm supposed to think that it's – how is it even worth mentioning that one out of seven votes you don't vote the way Bill Cadman from Colorado Springs, who I like a lot, one out of seven times you vote a different way from him? Who the hell cares?
Yeah, the spin that was put on that article, he told us he was writing this article, and we gave him our – he quoted me exactly what I said to him. So to his credit, he at least quoted me, right? But the spin he put on it was exactly as you have said. Look at these Republicans. They're divided. Nobody's controlling them. It's like herding cats. Oh, my gosh, this is going to be their downfall in the Senate. And we see it just the opposite. He has painted the perfect comparison between Republicans and Democrats, and yeah, who cares if I vote different than leadership one out of seven times? In fact, my constituents like that.
Now, and that brings me to another question I wanted to ask you. So, Senate District 19, you are in, I think, what would fairly be called a swing district, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And I think it's reasonably likely that your next election will be pretty competitive. Is that fair also?
It is.
And so what do you do as a principled conservative Republican in a purple district to win over the votes of independent-minded people, soccer moms, people who don't necessarily pay a lot of attention to politics day after day, and especially people who may be susceptible to the kind of Democratic vote buying, and I'll give you all this stuff for free, and, you know, in a county where they just recalled a very good school board and put in a bunch of union hacks?
Well, I do the same thing this election that I did the last one. I go out and I knock on doors. I meet people face to face. I have a conversation with them about, you know, the taxes they're paying. What are the issues right now that you're facing in your family or in your business that could be impacted by the state legislature? And then we have that conversation. And it's about educating people of what, A, I have control over, because there's a lot of mailers coming out saying that I'm going to single-handedly cost every job in the state, that, you know, it's just ridiculous, the stuff that comes up on these mailers. But we have a conversation to debunk some of the myth and to just educate them a little bit about what a vote for me could mean for their family, their business, in the Senate. So.
And I guess it worked once. So when's your next election?
2016, November.
Okay. And do we already know who the Democrat is, or are they going to have a primary to choose? Or
there is, well, they may have a primary. I don't know about that, but I do know that the one who has said she's going to run is the same one I beat in 2014, Rachel Zenzinger. So she had one session in the legislature. It's the handpicked replacement for the lady we recalled out here, Senator Hudak. Rachel was there for one session, then I ran against her in 2014 and beat her. So now she's running against me, and we will face off in November.
And just to clarify, did Hudak get recalled, or did she? I thought she was the one who resigned before she would get recalled.
That's exactly right. She did resign before we were able to turn in our petitions.
Interesting. Now, another thing that is, I think, going to be a big issue. Well, there's a couple big issues, and we only have about 3 minutes here, but just real quick. And in fact, I won't play the sound from Hickenlooper in the interest of time, but one of the things that comes up is population rising faster than road capacity, and Hickenlooper talking about we really need new money for roads. And I mean, we have seen rapid population growth, and we have seen worsening traffic. What's your take on that issue?
Well, we have seen worsening roads, and, you know, it's the Democrats who've robbed all the transportation money out of the transportation fund over the past several years. We've got new money. He wants to take hospital provider fee money, and we've got a legal opinion from legal services at the Capitol saying that would be unconstitutional. So the governor is asking the legislature to do something that is unconstitutional, and he's promised that money not only to transportation but to education, and he's got all these different groups who have heard him say, let's find some new money and fix Colorado's problems, and they're all coming with their handout saying, I want some of that fixed. But we, are, as a legislature, have to budget to the current law. For two out of the last 3 years, the Democrats have been in control, and they have expanded Medicaid. They've used faster dollars for all kinds of projects other than what they were supposed to be used for, speaking of transportation money. And we have to budget to current law. So that's what we're charged with. Until we can change the laws, we have to budget to them.
All right, so give me a short answer on this. And our guest is State Senator Laura Woods from Senate District 19. Is it possible, in your opinion, to, over time, this is not something that needs to be accomplished in 1 year, to over time expand, modernize Colorado's road system to handle the anticipated influx of people who want to live in Colorado without having to raise tax rates?
I think if the transportation money we receive were used for road projects, that's a starting point. It's a very complicated issue. There's not an easy answer to I-70 West out of Denver, I-25 South between Monument and Castle Rock. We've been thinking a three-lane highway there since Hickenlooper got elected. That was his promise. It hasn't happened yet. I-25 North to Fort Collins. No easy answers to some of this. But starting with putting transportation dollars to transportation projects is a good start. We don't need more money. Let's prioritize the money we're bringing in now.
State Senator Laura Woods, thank you very much for your time and insights this morning. Appreciate it as always.
Thank you, Ross.
All right. Have fun at the parade.